Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Great Brazilian team. Gout, it's there. They're ahead.
It's one of the biggest sporting events in the world. And today, we're giving you an inside look at the teams and playoff pictures to date.
As we present Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
It's okay now. The goalkeeper's beaten. And South Africa have their first goal.
Listen as Jason Longshore gives you all the latest in the world of soccer.
As we break down the matchups and get you insights you can only find here.
A draw! Oh, he's in the post! Theo has to! He's in the post! But it's finally in!
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Thanks for hanging out with us late night after NFL football. I'm Jason Longshore alongside Jessica Charman. And Jess, we had more chaos, more controversy, but most importantly, we had a top-seeded team knocked out today at the World Cup.
Plenty of drama. I think we should just start to expect it, honestly, with this World Cup. It seems like every day I'm taken aback by something that happens in some sort of way. But we thought it was going to happen. Belgium kind of had their destiny written in the sand, and it came back to bite them that they just weren't clinical enough today. They could have taken control of their destiny, but weren't able to do it with their finishing.
Yeah, they had one good half in the tournament, and it was the last one they played, and we'll get into some details on that one. Croatia didn't exactly look good, by the way. Two old teams playing in that one. We'll get into that group. I want to start with the absolute chaos in the other group that was in action today. If you were watching both games this afternoon with Japan and Spain and Germany and Costa Rica, the favorites, Japan and Spain, or Spain and Germany, they got their goals early in the first half. I was starting my notes. I'm like, we're good. It's all went as expected. I'm already starting to lay out the show tonight. Yeah, then the second halves happened, and we saw at various points everybody that was involved in this group in a spot to advance, and then it all moved around. Ninth minute, Spain and Germany are both leading. They're both going through. 49th minute, Japan tied it with Spain. 51st minute, Japan took the lead against Spain. And that goal's got a lot of things to talk about. The 55th minute, Costa Rica leveled it with Germany. And Germany went to the bottom of the table. 15 minutes later, Costa Rica went ahead of Germany. And that would have knocked Spain out. And then the 72nd minute, Germany came back, and they were chasing more goals. They had to turn goal differential by like six. They were hoping that Spain would come back and get something done. They couldn't do it, and Japan ends up winning the group. Spain comes in second, and Germany goes home.
I'm not going to lie, I didn't have Spain finishing second in the group after their 7-0 victory in the opener, I'll be quite frank to you, but that shows the battle and the adjustments that Japan made. And even before they conceded the goal, I had this feeling that Japan had come to play. I sent you a text after their first attack. That was very short-lived. They conceded literally the minute you text me back. But I felt like they had more fight from the very beginning. They've been a second half team a lot of this tournament. They continue to do so. Let's be honest, the biggest impact they had was in the second half, but it felt like they were more prepared for an entire battle during this game. And I was really impressed with them. On the flip side, when Costa Rica took the lead, I mean, it was wild. All hell broke loose. And watching that table switch around with who was going through, it was a once in a while experience. I don't know how often that's going to happen in a World Cup. Costa Rica just in the end couldn't hold on. I think it was a conceder pretty much. What? How long did that emotion last for? About 3 minutes?
Couple of minutes.
Took it back. But it was a really exciting group. And one, like I said, I don't know how often we're going to feel that way with all four teams entering the potential knockout stages winning a game.
This is why, FIFA, you need to have four-team groups. Don't even think about doing the three-team groups that you had on the table for 2026. Four-team groups, three games. You get this kind of drama. You get games starting at the same time. I think they actually handled their organization pretty well on this. The games were roughly right at the same time in each game. It was madness. And I guess maybe one of the craziest things about this is Japan's win. They had 17.7% possession in this game. 17.7% possession. That is the lowest possession figure, winner or loser, in recorded tournament history. It goes back to 1966 for the World Cup. They're through to their second straight knockout stage. Incredible performance. Luis Enrique talked about it afterwards, the Spanish manager, and he said there were 5 minutes of panic for his team, and that's about right. The start of the second half was horrendous. They scored two goals and could have scored another two, Luis Enrique said. He said, when a team like Japan has nothing to lose, it happens that they fly like airplanes. Then it went back to normal. The end was already difficult because they were very closed. Japan goes first, and it's deserved. Luis Enrique said, it annoys me. I wanted to be first. When they got that lead, especially late in this game, if you go back and look at how Japan was set up, they would not let Spain into that area. We call it zone 14 in soccer. The area at the top of the 18-yard box, that's where the majority of goals or assists come from, especially for a team like Spain. Japan might have had five players in that little sliver of space. Spain couldn't go through there. They had to go outside. And Japan handled their business defensively.
It wasn't necessarily pretty at times. Obviously, it's not the style that you want to see, but it was effective. And they had the right game plan against Spain to break them down. They frustrated the players. They had them on the back foot in terms of not knowing how to get through that block and into the 18. And I'm wondering if a little bit of immaturity showed in some of the younger Spanish players that they weren't able to adjust their style of play to be able to find a way through the Japanese.
Yeah, and you get frustrated in a situation like this where you're in complete control in the first 45. And I agree with Luis Enrique. It was 5 minutes of panic, and they looked panicked. And then once they got their heads around it, you're down 2-1 against a team that is very comfortable sitting back and clogging up space, and you didn't have time to find the breakthrough. Full credit to this Japanese team, who it's not fair to just talk about the possession number in the sense that that's a bad thing. They have been very pragmatic, and I know that's a loaded word in soccer. I think a lot of people use it as a synonym for defensive. That's not the way I'm trying to use it. They've been pragmatic in the way that what the word means. They have certain skill sets with this Japanese team. They have a certain level of technical ability. It's very high. They don't have a lot of size. They know that they can't play at the same tempo with your Spains, with your Germanies for 90 minutes. So they pick their spots, and they pick their spots really well. And I think the spot they've picked the most has been second half, different periods. You go back and you look at the Germany game, you look at the Spain game, different portions of the second half, but both goals came really quickly. It's almost like when they get that opportunity to press, they create the turnover and they make the other team wobble. They go all in for the knockout right then. And they're getting it in this tournament.
No, they know how to see when a team's vulnerable and kind of catch them when they're down. I think you talk about that short space between goals. They understand that instead of being grateful that they finished a goal, trying to set back and defend again and just maintain the fact that they've got one back, that this is the time to capitalize on that shakiness, like you said, to capitalize on that frustration in the team that they've conceded a goal, frustration that they've been broken down, and they capitalize on it well. And I think it's a really dangerous characteristic for any team that's going to face the Japanese, because one thing you know is one goal's not enough, not at all. You need to make sure that you're seeing out games against the Japanese and taking every opportunity you get, because if they play this style, which I'm sure they'll continue to do, they're going to prevent you getting as many high quality opportunities. So when one does come, when you are able to break through, you better believe that you need to finish it, if you're not going to look back at this one and let it haunt you.
They're going to concede possession. They're going to sit and defend. They're going to pick their spots to press. And when they get that vulnerability coming out of you, they are going to go in for the kill at that point. They're ruthless. And they did something in this tournament that only two other teams in World Cup history, going all the way back to 1930, have done. They've come back from losing at halftime to win two games in a tournament. They've done it in their first three games in the tournament, which is amazing. We go through the stat all the time, Jess, in MLS, where, you know, if you concede the first goal, what's your record? It's really bad across the league. Every team is like that. What's the record if you're losing at halftime? Really bad, because it's really hard to do what Japan has done now twice, and not just against anybody, against Germany and against Spain. It's incredible. And they're a team that Croatia will face in the round of 16, and Croatia should be terrified.
They should. They really should, because this is a team that doesn't say die. I also think that you have to give a lot of praise to the coach. Whatever he's saying at halftime, his players are buying in well and truly. That's an inspirational team talk. That's an invested side in what their manager has to say. And it's also a very smart team in terms of understanding their ability and knowing not to let their heads drop. A lot of teams mentally struggle to come back from games. It's not just to do with their ability, but it's to do with the mental toughness. It's to do with the resilience. It's to do with the belief of facing adversity. Japan faced adversity in that game, and it almost seems like at times they enjoy the adversity. They enjoy being the underdog. They enjoy people counting them out, because they love that emotion of proving them wrong. You saw it in the goal celebrations, and you saw it in the way that they, you know, made their opportunities count. And if I'm Croatia and I'm an older team, I'm really worried about this second and third wind that the Japanese seem to find in every game they play.
Yeah, it's going to be an issue for Croatia. We'll talk about it a little bit more when we talk about Croatia in the next segment. On the Germany side, I mean, they created chances in this game, of course. They win 4-2. XG was 6.08, depending on which XG model you're using, which is crazy. 11 shots on target. That's 7 saves for Kaylor Navas, who was under siege. 32 shots for Germany in total. Thomas Müller said after the game, he said, if that was my last game for Germany, it was a tremendous pleasure. Thank you very much to the fans. He said, I always tried to show heart on the pitch. Sometimes there were tears of joy, sometimes pain. I did it with love. Thomas Müller would be, I think, 37 in 2026. I'm not expecting to see him at that point. He deserves a send-off in Germany with the national team, no question. One of the all-time greats in the game. One of the all-time great characters in the game. My bigger question when it comes to Germany is, Hansi Flick took over for Yogi Love. Yogi Love got bounced in the group stage in 2018. Hansi Flick gets bounced in the group stage in 2022. Germany is hosting the Euros in 2024. Hansi Flick's contract is through that tournament. Can they continue with him after a second straight, even though he's only on the hook for one, but a second straight group stage elimination? Can he be in that job until 2024?
I think it's going to be really tough. I really do, because you're hosting, and as much as you want to be successful in any tournament that you play, when you're at home in front of your fans, when you have that advantage in terms of it being in your country, you want to make sure that you come up and show the best that you can. And I feel like there will be a lot of nervousness in the German, you know, football powers that think, what if we play like this? What if we don't get results? What if we're unable to get the best out of the quality players? I mean, they played well today. They haven't been awful throughout the tournament, but they just haven't been able to get it done. And that's a problem. And it's a problem when you have the level of players that Germany has to pick from. It's not like he's having to make magic out of weak players. He's got plenty of household names and hasn't been able to do it. it's a tough one because you want to have consistency, and 2 years is going to come around really, really, really fast with a December World Cup as well. So it's that balance between, do you have the right person lined up that can have an impact right away over the next 2 years? Or are you going to take the gamble of going with someone that's familiar in terms of, you know, having this experience under his belt, even though it's not a success, that's for sure.
I will pass a piece of advice on to the folks in charge of Liverpool Football Club. They might want to block all incoming calls from Germany. Just an idea, just a thought. Jurgen Klopp, you know, the name's out there as potentially taking over the German job at some point. Liverpool might just want to block all incoming calls from Germany. I'm just saying. That could get really interesting. What was also interesting is the second goal for Japan. VAR and all kinds of issues here. First off, I think, just to remind everybody in terms of the laws of the game, the whole ball has to be over the line to be out of play. I thought watching it live, it was out of play. I did. Okay. The initial angle they showed, you see green grass between the ball on the ground and the line. However, the ball is a sphere. Maybe we may need to go back to, I guess, geometry, trigonometry classes. I don't know. I'm not a math guy. But the part of the ball, and people have posted videos that you can actually test this in your own home if you choose, if you have a soccer ball or any kind of round ball. The ball can be not touching the line and still be over the line. And they finally got some angles where I thought they showed it to where, yeah, I'm pretty sure like part of the ball was over the line, and I'm pretty sure it was good. The way the process happened was confusing. Yes. I think the AR put a flag up, and we don't really know. Did the AR signal that it was out, and then did VAR show that or tell the referee, or the referee, you know, believed it that no, the ball was in, so we made a clear and obvious error, so we're going to give the goal? Or did the AR not signal that it was out? Just, I don't know what the deal was with the flag. And they couldn't conclude either way from the video, so they gave the goal. We don't know that aspect of it, but seeing it more and more and seeing some different angles, I think they got the call right. And that's the important thing.
Yeah, having watched on Twitter some of the videos with the ball and the piece of paper that people have been doing and posting, it makes you feel a little bit better about the fact they probably got it right in terms of the angle. It's misleading. It's confusing. I wish they had goal line technology that just would have beeped on the sideline as well. That would be lovely if there was a way to add that in, because goal line technology is the one that I will die on this hill that belongs in the game, because that's so smooth. And I wish more decisions could be like that.
We need drones. If we had a drone over it there, or we had some kind of like big overhanging camera, then we could have dealt with that a little bit better. I think they got it right. I thought ITV, if you've seen any of the other commentary around this, Graham Souness basically trying to allege that there was a conspiracy about this one and not showing videos and not getting it right was really crazy. I think they got it right. I think in general, and I don't know why VAR is coming under fire across the board again after this. I think VAR has been good in the tournament. There's like one or two calls that I really have an issue with, and they're subjective. So I'm sure we'll have more. Don't worry, all the referee conspiracy theory people out there. I'm sure we're going to have more to talk about as this tournament goes on. We'll be back in 3 minutes, and I've got a question for you to think about during the break. Can it be a golden generation if that generation doesn't actually win a trophy? We'll talk about that when Atlanta Soccer Tonight returns on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Taking a look back at today's matches with Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Got on a little early tonight because the Buffalo Bills were wanting to hear more soccer talk on Atlanta radio. Very, very cool. Thank you, Buffalo. We're very appreciative. Let's talk about the other group in action today, Jess. We're going to play a little game called The Good, The Bad, The Ugly, and Oof. All right? The Good, Morocco. Morocco wins the group. Very cool story. Nobody saw that coming into this tournament. This is the second World Cup where two African nations have got through the group stage in the same tournament. And there's still a couple more, Cameroon and Ghana, who have a shot. Amazing story. And Morocco, a lot of talk about Croatia, a lot of talk about Canada, a lot of talk about Belgium. But Morocco has been really good in this tournament.
They have. They've finished their chances. They've played well. They've dominated in terms of winning the group now. And I think that, honestly, being the dark horse has probably come in their favor a little. I don't think they're going to mind that people haven't been talking about them. I don't think they're going to mind at all that people have underestimated them, because they've been able to come out and prove themselves on the pitch. And now as they get into the group stages, it's going to be a tougher challenge because people aren't going to overlook them in the same way. But they have the quality to back up the results. They aren't going into games and getting lucky. They're playing well. They have great forward attack. They're finishing in terms of finishing chances, but most importantly, they know how to defend and frustrate teams as well.
Mounir El Khadioui, their goalkeeper, has only conceded one goal in the tournament. It was an own goal as well today against Canada. Hakimi, one of the best right backs in the world, is playing like it in this tournament. Hakim Ziyech is playing like the player that Chelsea brought in. He's playing great in this tournament. It's two amazing players that are carrying their team, and they're good defensively. Not going to be easy for Spain to deal with in the round of 16 at all. And you're right. Flying under the radar, they're going to be very happy with that, and they'll continue it against Spain. They will have to face a kind of angry Spain team, maybe an annoyed Spain team like Luis Enrique. But Morocco has the quality to play straight up with Spain. And if you're a history buff, you're going to see Spain and Morocco in a match and say, oh, wait a minute, there might be a little extra spice to this one.
Yeah, I mean, there's no love lost between the colonialism, right? And I think there might be a little bit of beef between the two. But at the end of the day, I think that Morocco really has a chance in this one. And I didn't think I would be saying that anyone had a chance against Spain after seeing how they played. But watching Japan frustrate the Spanish so much and have so much success by defending against them and being able to prevent them creating chances, I think Morocco has more quality defensively to be able to deal with it successfully without sacrificing quite as much in terms of possession, in terms of being able to have the ball as Japan did. And I think Spain may be looking and doing a lot of hard video research of what they have to adjust to be able to break through a defensive line.
Yeah, you get Hakimi and Ziyech out in open space on the counter. Morocco can cause Spain some serious problems. So that's our good. The bad, Croatia for me. Croatia was not good today at all. The game with Croatia and Belgium, the first half was just awful.
Dire.
Here's a reason why possibly this might be ageism, and I'm sorry if it is, but this was the oldest combination of starting lineups in a World Cup match ever.
Looked like it.
Yeah, it definitely looked like it. I was expecting a walker to come flying out at some point. And Croatia, you know, they never really looked all that good in this game either. They didn't, I don't want to say they didn't look like they were in trouble, because they did. They did concede some chances that we're going to talk about here in a second, but they didn't elevate their game like I expected and like they're going to have to do going forward. Maybe it is the age catching up to him. I think Luka Modric gave you everything that he could. They also, and I think their biggest flaw, and it's going to come out either in the round of 16 or if they can get through that to a quarterfinal, they just don't have a threat up top. They don't have that pace that can give them something a little different.
No, it's very predictable. One trick pony kind of thing. They don't have a different option to give them an outlet. And I think that it was difficult because they didn't find, I know we've used the word second wind a lot, but they didn't have a next level. They didn't have a next gear to shift up on. It was very flat, very one tone. And I thought that Croatia in a couple of the other games had been able to turn the gears and improve throughout the game. And in this one, it was very linear. It was very stagnant. And there was a time where Belgium looked like they may threaten them and take advantage of that. And they just weren't able to finish the golden opportunity that they had.
You do have to look at what's coming, though. It's Croatia and Japan in the round of 16. We know what Japan can do to a team that dominates possession. We've seen it twice in this tournament already. But Croatia's a little wilier than Spain. They've got that veteran experience. They're going to know what they can risk and what they can't. I think they're more of a veteran team than Germany as well. So I think they're maybe a little bit better positioned to deal with the threat of Japan. Japan's not going to surprise you at this point. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting game. That's a very interesting tactical battle. And I'm curious to see what Croatia does, maybe to protect themselves in that one as much as go out and try to win it.
Yeah, it's going to be a war of the minds, honestly. And that's what makes the knockout round so exciting, too, because you've had three games. You've had a larger sample. You're understanding now the trends between teams. You're seeing what they tend to do well and where their weaknesses are more at this tournament. You can't necessarily do that when you're looking back at qualifiers, because a lot's different in a qualifier versus a group stages, including the personnel, including the atmosphere. Obviously, playing in December and in a different temperature is also affecting this one. And I think that now you've got a larger selection size. Croatia has the experience to adjust and deal with a different opportunity and a different team. But at the same time, I think that you can never, ever write off the Japanese at this point. I think if there's one lesson we've learned from the World Cup, it's that, you know, they will come back and they will try with all their might to get back on the scoreboard.
The ugly in this group, I'm going to give it to Canada. And I know Canada's the darlings for a lot of people out there. They attacked. They were fun. Absolutely fun. The ugly today was Milan Borjan, the goalkeeper. What happened to him today?
I think there's been hints at it throughout the tournament, honestly. He just doesn't look like a World Cup keeper. And I think that he has been exposed in this tournament with the best level players facing him, and had been exposed because defensively they've left him exposed at times, but he wasn't there to make those big saves. And we're seeing a lot of these teams that are doing well have a goalkeeper behind them that's able to pick up the pieces when the defense aren't. And he's looked nervous. He's looked tentative. He hasn't had clean hands. He's come for things. His decision-making's been off, but he wasn't destined to start, I don't think, correct? He wasn't going to be
the starter. He was. He's been their guy for a while.
He doesn't look like it. I'll say that. Yeah, he does not look like a goalkeeper that belongs in a starting lineup. And I think that he will look back at this one with very unfriendly and unpleasant feelings. And that sucks as a goalkeeper, because I've been there when you've had bad games, but not on the World Cup stage. It has not been a good three games for him.
Yeah, I don't know if the World Cup has rules against it, or maybe it's just too hot for it, but the man needs to wear his pants. Like, mm-hmm. he's a goalkeeper, one of the few that you see these days who generally is wearing his tracksuit trousers. He's generally a goalkeeper in pants, and he looks weird. It doesn't look right. He's looked uncomfortable. The man needs to wear his pants. Because the XG allowed by Canada in this tournament, 3.8 goals is the XG allowed. That's pretty good. That's not bad. Costa Rica was 10.1 in what they allowed. They also gave up 11 goals, but Keylor Navas probably made 538 saves in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Milan Borjan has not made that many saves. He's given up 7 goals in the tournament on an XG of 3.8. And if you do the math, that's not good. That's not good at all. Canada's one of the most interesting teams in this tournament, because I think a lot of people loved their just funness, if we want to make up words. They just threw numbers forward. They just went for mm-hmm. it. It was very naive at times. That's the word that I've generally keep coming to describe Canada. Canadian media seems to think that John Herdman, no chance that they're going to move on from him. Really, they're more worried that somebody's going to come in and hire him instead of, you know, give him more money and hire him for a bigger job mm-hmm. than like moving on from him. I don't know. I don't know if he can take a next step with that program. They might actually be better off if some club does come in and hire him, in my opinion. I think the naivete of the way they approach some of these games was eye-opening for me. And it wasn't what we saw from Canada in the World Cup qualifiers. And I'm kind of baffled as to why. That's not even getting into the comments on Croatia and no handshake after that. That's not even getting into that stuff. That's just wrong. He looked like somebody who hadn't managed in high level games before. And I don't know how that's going to change between now and 26 dramatically for Canada.
No, I think Canada needs to go out and really prepare for 2026 by playing higher level competition as well, and really trying to give themselves experience against big nations. For me, it's one of those where I compare it to like a coach that gets their team promoted to the Premier League, right? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to let go of that coach because what they did for you to get you into the promised land, right? And I think Canada is infatuated with him because he took them to qualify top of CONCACAF. You know, he did something that was very, very special. He improved them so significantly. But has he reached his cap? Was that what his destiny was to do for this team? Was his duty to improve and improve, get them to this level? And now he's shown that maybe he's not quite cut out at this stage of his career to be handling at the top, because the naivety was costly. And I think my issue with the naivety is you could learn about it after game one, right? You could kind of make the adjustments after that, but the continued determination to try what has already clearly failed makes you a lunatic, right? That's what they say. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again with the same result. And that's what he did. And I think it's so tough because so many people are still coming away about how proud we are of this Canadian side. And yes, like it's amazing. They represent on the World Cup stage. But you look back at their results, you look back at their games, and okay, Alphonso Davies, if he scores penalty in game one, maybe it's a different game. But he didn't. Mm-hmm. Should he have taken the penalty? Was that a poor managerial decision?
Yes.
You know, we look back through all of these things that happen in games, and I feel a little lackluster about this Canadian side, honestly. I expected more. I expected more. I was excited about the product that maybe we would see.
Yeah, I didn't know if I expected more points and more results. By the way, they're only the third team in the history of the World Cup to start their World Cup history with 6 straight losses. They lost their 3 games in 86. They lost their 3 games this time around. Mexico back in the day lost their first 6 games. El Salvador has lost their first 6 games at the tournament. Canada's in that group now. I expected a little more organization, that's all. And I expected a better performance in that game too, for sure. So Canada's gone. That's the ugly. I had to make up a new category for Romelu Lukaku today. He Aww. Got the oof.
Bad.
I know, but it's bad. He's only played 31 minutes of soccer this season with Inter, so there's an explanation for it. It looked like he was rusty. He came on at halftime. He'd only played 9 minutes in the tournament. Came on at halftime. He had 5 shots. The total expected goals value of his 5 shots, 1.7. To accomplish that in such a short period of time is impressive. It's the opposite when you don't score on any of those five that you're expected the majority of the time to have 1.7 goals out of shots like that.
Whew. Yeah, it hurts your heart a little bit because you never want a player to feel like they're responsible for their team getting knocked out, right? And in the aftermath, you've seen the pictures of him with Thierry Henry, and it's heartbreaking, right? It's absolutely heartbreaking because he feels the weight of a nation on his shoulders. And this was the golden generation. They know that it's not going to be this personnel again. And he realizes that he messed up. He's a forward. His duty is to score goals. I feel like the guy was set up for failure, though, because he wasn't 100% going out there and playing. And I think a fit, Lukaku probably puts at least one of those opportunities in the goal. And I think that it was just sad to see a player with his legacy fail so hard on the biggest stage. Yet it was a very bad fall from grace for Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah, it was for Belgium as well. Roberto Martinez is done with Belgium. He said that after the loss. They had 37 times in the tournament that they connected 10 or more passes in a sequence, and they only converted those into shots 5% of the time, or a touch in the opposition box, a shot or a touch in the opposition box, only 5% of the time. That's possession without a purpose. It's ugly for Belgium, and the golden generation question that I teased you with, yeah, you can be a golden generation if you don't win a trophy, if you're a country like Belgium. To get to a semifinal, to do what they've done, yeah, it can still be a golden generation, but it still feels like it came up a little short. And Kevin De Bruyne is probably right that 2018 was their year. It didn't happen. They come up short, and now it's over, and it crashed really hard today. All right, next segment, we're going to bounce around some of the news of the tournament, some of the news of the game worldwide, and also take a deeper look at USA and Netherlands coming up on Saturday. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Now we're back with more of our look at all of today's matches on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Let's go!
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. Lots of odds and ends going on around the World Cup and just around soccer as a whole. We're going to take some time to kind of bounce around and also give you some nuggets ahead of USA and Netherlands. I'm Jason Longshore hanging out with Jessica Charman tonight. Jess, we talked about Mexico a lot last night. The fallout continues. The Federation President, Jan de Luisa, was asked if he's considering resigning. He says no. This is Mexico's first time they haven't made the knockout stages at a World Cup they've played in since 1978. A lot of times we see managers lose their job in these situations. Tata Martino was out of contract. I don't think they were going to renew it anyway. Sometimes we do see federation presidents lose their job in these situations. Mexico soccer politics is always an interesting topic. We'll see if they make a move or not, but he says he's not quitting. Will he be pushed out of the job? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, let's be honest, he doesn't want to resign. He's not the sort of person that's going to put himself in that position. But at the end of the day, when you embarrass your nation, which by the headlines that I've seen out of Mexico, they feel very embarrassed. They feel like they've hit rock bottom was one of the headlines. You're going to ask for accountability. And I think Antonio said it, who came on our show. Accountability comes from the top down. It's not just Tata Martino's fault as the coach. It's not just the players if they didn't perform the best they could on the pitch. It comes from the federation, the club owners, and the mess that is Mexican soccer right now. And there needs to be a switch up, and there needs to be a switch up fast because you've got a World Cup to co-host.
We'll go back to what happened with the U.S. when the U.S. men's national team didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. There was a lot of pressure on people losing their jobs. Bruce Arena was on an interim basis or hired really short term, not interim, to get to the World Cup and get through the World Cup. He didn't get there. He was out of contract. But there was a lot of pressure on Sunil Gulati to resign at that point. He opted to see his term out instead and not run again because the elections were coming up pretty soon after that. So essentially, yeah, it cost him his job. He probably would have stayed in the role if that had not happened. Now, I did have a chance today to catch up with Gonzalo Pineda, manager of Atlanta United, former Mexican international. Full props to Gonzalo. He had just landed at the airport and got in his car and talked to me about what's going on with Mexico for a while. I also posted a clip earlier, and you can hear the whole interview on the Off the Woodwork podcast folder, by the way. But he also talked about Derek Etienne Jr., the new Atlanta United signing. Great conversation with Gonzalo, as always. But one of the things that you kind of alluded to, Jess, that I talked about with Gonzalo, just what needs to change? What are some of those other factors that make it difficult for the Mexican national team to be at the same level they used to be? And here's what Gonzalo thought about that.
Well, it is a whole, right? So in Mexico, we stopped playing Copa America. We stopped playing Copa Libertadores, Copa Sudamericana. In my opinion, that was a great success in terms of the experience we got at an early stage to play in Boca Juniors. I played a final when I was, 21, 22. I played a final in Boca Juniors stadium in La Bombonera, and it was a fantastic environment. I learned a lot from those moments and the pressures you are into. I would say that teaches you a lot. So that exposure is good. That, you know, facing Chivas versus River and Club America versus Boca and Sao Paulo versus Cruz Azul, that's what we want to see to be exposed to a better level. And also in CONCACAF, especially, you know, we in Mexico, we're going to have some issues because we don't have Olympics. I said that we don't have the qualifying tournaments. So how we are going to figure it out, that competitive matches to prepare our team for the next World Cup, where we're going to be the host. And it seems like it's going to be a challenge for us to put a good team together to compete.
That last point is so vital, and it applies to the U.S. and it applies to Canada as well. You're not going to have qualification. UEFA has their Nations League, so there's not going to be a lot of friendlies of high profile that you're going to be able to get. I really think the partnership between CONCACAF and CONMEBOL needs to develop, and it needs to develop now at the national team level for sure. There has to be a Copa America Centenario kind of tournament like we saw in 2016. With the best of South America and the best of CONCACAF in 2024. That has to happen. It has to. And
everyone
U.S., Mexico, and Canada should be fighting
too.
For it. Yeah,
can you think 100%. About the revenue that would bring in? It would be wild.
Go back to 2016. The amount of money that U.S. soccer and all the others made from that. I mean, you had people getting arrested for bribes to try to make more money as that tournament was coming together. It was such a moneymaker. Everybody knew it was the golden goose. And I can't believe they haven't done it again. There's a lot of politics, a lot of people jockeying for power. They need to get over themselves and make some cash and also help these national teams. But the other thing Gonzalo said that I would love to see is CONCACAF teams playing in the Copa Libertadores, the Copa Sudamericana. There's a ton of logistical issues. CONCACAF wants to keep that money inside the Champions League. It's expanding. There's a lot of things to work through that. But Gonzalo's dead on. Players of the previous generation in Mexico had opportunities that the current generation does not have. And we'll see how they handle that going forward. Again, the whole interview is on the Off the Woodwork podcast folder. You can check that out. You'll also check out the interview with Ricardo Oliveira, who you're going to hear here shortly. Ricardo's the club performance coach with Atlanta United. We'll talk a little Brazil with him in our next segment. Some other news on the table. Juventus, if you missed it recently, their entire board of directors stepped down. That's usually not a good sign. That means something is going on. Two things going on. The Italian financial authorities are investigating Juventus. That's never good. The Italian taxman is probably undefeated. And UEFA's club financial control body has opened a formal investigation revolving around financial fair play. Juventus settled with UEFA. They didn't hit their break-even requirement last year. They settled, but it looks like some of the numbers that were used in that settlement were not accurate. And some of the salaries that were reportedly sacrificed during COVID-19 cutbacks were just deferred and actually paid out. So they ended up paying money that they said they didn't pay out. It's a mess. And when we get into a January transfer window, Juve is one of those clubs that you expect to potentially be active. I don't think that's going to happen now.
Speaking of a fan of a team that breached financial fair play, I'll tell you, the sanctions that are put in really hinder you in terms of spending any money. So it's part of the game, and it's really poor management if you're not able to keep yourself breaking in even like you're told to. So that could be very dangerous for Juventus in terms of the future, because if you can't spend money, you know how it is in football these days, it's going to drop you down the pecking order.
Weston McKennie, get out. Go somewhere else. Take that deal with Borussia Dortmund if they're going to come in and offer you money. And Juve might need that money too, by the way. So that's going to get interesting. What's also going to get interesting is the bidding war, it sounds like, is emerging for Cristiano Ronaldo. Al Nassr reportedly put an offer down on the table. And if you remember when Pitti Martinez was transferred from Atlanta United to Al Nassr, the introduction video for Pitti is maybe one of the greatest things I've ever seen. It's basically giving him a briefcase, a golden briefcase full of money. That's the introduction video. They're going to have about 10 briefcases for Cristiano Ronaldo, and it looks like they've got competition. Their Saudi rivals, Al Hilal, are also chasing Cristiano Ronaldo, and reports have the salary offers over $100 million per year.
Stupid money when you think about it, isn't it? It's just sickening, honestly, hearing it. But I don't know. They're going to have a Rolls Royce there for him as well in the promotional video, I'm sure.
They're going to give him 5 Rolls Royces. I mean, it's insane what this is going to turn into. The question is just, does he want to go play in Saudi Arabia, which is a competitive league, but not as competitive as probably 15 other leagues in Europe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what offers are going to be out there for him in the big 5 teams in the Champions League. I don't know who that might be. Just going to have to wait and see. Reportedly, he's not entertaining any of this until his World Cup is over with Portugal. Interesting timing on this, as England is preparing for a round of 16 game. Comes out that Declan Rice is indicating he wants to leave West Ham. He's been in these transfer rumors for quite a while. He says he wants to win trophies and play in the Champions League. Probably not going to do that at West Ham. Is this potentially a distraction going into a round of 16 match with Senegal?
I don't think it's the right time for those rumors to be coming out, quite frankly. I think it's almost like the Cristiano Ronaldo stuff, like we talked about, in terms of he's not doing any wrong by wanting to leave. It makes sense. A lot of people have been saying for quite a long time that he needs to be playing at a higher level club, not a mid-table Premier League team. But at the same time, there's a time and place, right? And it's not right before you're about to play. That's now on the back of his mind slipping in. You can't say it's not going to, because you want to know your future. You want to know what's going on. You'd want to know where you're going to play. And he's been an important player for England in the midfield. And I think that if he is not focused, focus is going to be so key in this game about Senegal, because a lot of it's going to be about composure, about decision-making, about trying to win, you know, the tactical battle in midfield. And I just wish, yeah, I wish this had waited till the end of the World Cup, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. U.S. Netherlands on Saturday. We've been kind of getting you ready for this. Last night we got deep into the Dutch kind of philosophy and mentality. Here's some news nuggets around this game. We'll get deeper into it tomorrow from a U.S. tactical perspective. Andreas Noppert, the goalkeeper for the Dutch, 6'8". We've talked about him. He was a big surprise coming in. They didn't really have a goalkeeper settled coming into the tournament. He got the opportunity. He's delivered the second best goalkeeper in the tournament in terms of the quality of shots he stopped, that XG indication, where our pantsless friend Borjan is very poor in this regard. Noppert is the second best in the tournament, the XG of the shots that are on target minus goals allowed. That's not good for the U.S. in that the Dutch have a hot goalkeeper who's making big saves.
No, it's not, particularly when the U.S. hasn't produced too many opportunities to test the goalkeeper, let alone quality opportunities. If it's going to take a lot to beat him, you need to be creating more opportunities. So there's a real concern about that, because when goalkeepers are playing well, they're growing with confidence every single game and they start to feel superhuman. And the one thing the U.S. wants to avoid is the Dutch goalkeeper having a superhuman performance against them in the knockout rounds.
One thing that we do a lot with our Atlanta United games on 92.9 The Game is we dig into the referees in the upcoming match and talk about what to expect. Well, the assignment has been given for who the referee will be for the USA and Netherlands. Wilton Sampaio of Brazil. You might not like this assignment. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. It could be good. It could be bad. It could be oof. He's known in the Brazilian league and in CONMEBOL competition for throwing yellow cards. He was about average in World Cup qualifiers, 4.3 per game. I think anywhere around 4 is generally average. However, in 6 games in World Cup qualifiers, he was one of the referees worldwide who worked the most qualifiers coming into this. In 6 games, he awarded 5 penalties. That's extremely high for a referee. You know, 6 games, it's not a whole season or anything, but almost a penalty per game is a little shocking. Also, 3 red cards in 6 games is a little shocking. Wilton Sampaio awarded more penalties than any other ref who worked World Cup qualifiers worldwide, and he also gave out more red cards than any other ref who worked qualifiers worldwide. I don't know if I'm happy about that or freaked out about it.
Decision-making is going to be key in terms of the challenges that you go in for, in terms of the descent that you have, in terms of, you know, are you going to leave the ground when you make a big tackle? I think it's going to be a lot of decision making. And the US has been a very physical side in a good way. There's been players that put their bodies on the line that go throwing into challenges, and hopefully they will get the benefit of the doubt on those decisions instead of a referee that goes quick to his pocket early on, because you just can't afford in this game to go down to 10 players. On the flip side, if I'm the US, I'm practicing penalties. I'm making sure I know exactly who's taking the penalty, because I think Pulisic's still day-to-day. You just never know. And you're making sure that everyone feels ready, that if they get that opportunity, that they're going to step up and make it happen, because you want to learn from your friendly Alphonso Davies, don't you?
Yes. And Christian Pulisic did clarify on what happened to him in the
hit. Yes, he did.
What's that?
He did. I heard his soundbite.
Yeah, he did. He specified that he wasn't hit where I thought he was hit. But yeah, it still is very painful. Hopefully he will be okay. I think he's going to play a part in it. I just don't know if he's going to be able to start. Louis van Gaal has now managed 10 World Cup games in his career. He was there in 2014 with the Dutch national team. 10 games. He has not lost. Completely discounting penalty shootouts as a loss. That goes down as a draw. Only Luis Felipe Scolari and Mario Zagallo, both of Brazil, have had longer undefeated streaks in their World Cup career. The Dutch have also reached at least the quarterfinal in four of their last five appearances at the World Cup. That's a little scary. The U.S. beat the Dutch in their last match in 2015. It was a friendly. It's the only time the U.S. has beaten the Dutch, but it was the last time, so that's good. And here's the last nugget I'll leave you with. Tyler Adams, Yunus Musa, Weston McKennie, one of the best midfields in the tournament, and you can quantify it. They've completed 75.1% of their passes. This is the team as a whole, ending in the final third. That's hard to do. These are passes going into the final third. That's seventh best in the tournament. The teams ahead of them, Spain, Argentina, Portugal, France, Germany, Brazil. That's good company to be in. They're getting into the final third. They've got to produce the better chances and then finish those chances. That's what it's going to come down to on Saturday. Count your juice boxes. We're going to take a look at the games coming up tomorrow in 3 minutes on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Hang out with us on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's soccer. It's soccer on the world stage.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered with Atlanta Soccer Tonight
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight closing it out on a Thursday evening / Friday morning. Getting ready for the final day of group action in the World Cup. Group H and Group G have to finish things off tomorrow. And there are some interesting stories to dig into. Jason Longshore joined by Jessica Charman. And Jess, one thing to clear up from the last segment, some talk about Canada and their goalkeeper two segments ago. Maxime Crépeau's name came up on the Bird app, and Crépeau is a goalkeeper I like a lot. LAFC, you will remember the broken leg that he suffered in the MLS Cup final. He was not their regular coming into the tournament. He's a goalkeeper that I would be fine if he was their regular goalkeeper. I think
that's who I was alluding to. I thought that his performance with LAFC deserved him to be in the talking for a starting position.
Yeah, but he only started five of the qualifiers out of how many did they play? 14. Boyan's their regular guy. He was going to get the games. Crépeau could be their next guy. But yeah, he was never their regular. He would have been in the team, don't get me wrong. And would they have turned to him after the Croatia game? I don't know. You know, judging the lineup from John Herdman today, I don't think they would have made dramatic changes. I don't think they would have just played him to play him. So Crepo's a great goalkeeper, and we'll see how he comes back from his broken leg. But he was not their regular. Boyan has been the guy that's carried him there, and he would have been the guy in this tournament. So let's get into the 10 o'clock games tomorrow. Group H, the group of revenge. South Korea and Portugal and Uruguay and Ghana. Let's start with South Korea and Portugal. We know Portugal's into the round of 16. Fernando Santos's team, they only need a draw to secure first place. How many players will they rest? We do know that Cristiano Ronaldo is a 50-50 issue on if he'll play. Reportedly a knee issue. He didn't practice yesterday, 2 days before the game. I don't know if he practiced the day before the game. It would have been a light session anyway. Fernando Santos said that if he's in good condition, he'll play. There's a plan if he's not available. South Korea's got to go for this in a big, big way. They have to win. They also need help in the other game. How much do you think Portugal should rotate here?
I think they should rotate because they've still got some age in their squad. They've still got some difficulties in terms of the quick turnaround of the games, and you know your destiny is secure. You still have to find your balance to have enough consistency that you can build momentum, right? I think it's problematic when teams make 6, 7, 8 changes, you lose your core group, and then you don't have momentum going into the last 16. But at the same time, you got to be smart. I think the Ronaldo situation is probably a blessing in disguise in some ways. In case he's going to be out, you've got to learn how to play without him, right? And I think it could be good to get some experience in a game that isn't be all and end all based on the result.
Yeah, I'm curious if the defense changes for Portugal. That's been the most unconvincing part of that side to me. And we'll see if they can maybe find something here. Portugal could get some revenge, though, on South Korea, because in 2002, the only time these teams have ever met, it was the final game in the group stage in 2002. The U.S. was very happy about the result. because South Korea won 1-0. That knocked Portugal out, and it allowed the U.S. to get through out of the group, even though they lost their third game against Poland in that tournament. So maybe some revenge here. Paulo Bento, the manager of South Korea, who is Portuguese, who was in that Portugal team that lost to South Korea, and it would have been a really weird day emotionally for him. He's not going to be on the touchline. He got red carded in the last game for South Korea. So we'll have to see. That game's revenge. There's revenge there. It's nothing like Uruguay and Ghana. Nothing at all. 12 years after they played, only time in the World Cup these two teams have met, quarterfinals in South Africa. If you know the story, I'd love to know people's takes on it. People have strong opinions about the sequence of events. Game's 1-1. It's late in extra time. Luis Suarez uses his hand, knocks a shot down on the line. It's seen. He gets a red card. It's a penalty for Ghana. Last kick of the game. In extra time, Asamoah Gyan hits it off the crossbar. Then it goes to a shootout, and Ghana loses the shootout. This game has it creates a lot of emotion for a lot of people. There are a lot of people who feel like Luis Suarez is a cheat because of that.
No, if my defender didn't do it, I would be furious. If I turned around and saw my defender not try and save it in that moment, knowing how little time was left, is it gamesmanship? Sure. Is it cheating? No. And I loved him in his press conference today where he said, I didn't do anything wrong. I took my punishment. He got his red card. It's not his fault. I wasn't the one to take the penalty. And I also like that he gave context. If I break a leg with a malicious challenge, I'm going to say, sorry, that's on me. I didn't hurt anybody. You know, he didn't. And I think that the people that are mad at Luis Suarez want the pure game, right? They want the beautiful game. But moments like this are what make soccer special as well. And it happens. And it's, honestly, it's soccer IQ. We talk about it with goalkeepers that come out the box and make a decision to take a player down. You know, sometimes it pays off, and it paid off for him. He can't apologize for making a risk, taking a risk, because guess what? If that penalty scored, everyone forgot about it. Not a big deal anymore. It's only a big deal because they couldn't finish the business in the penalty shootout.
Yeah, the question from a reporter from Ghana today in that press conference, they were fired up. It's people are angry at Luis Suarez, and there's plenty of things to be angry with Luis Suarez about in his career. Plenty.
Yes.
I can think of about five off the top of my head very easily. And three of them involve biting somebody in a match. Mm-hmm. This is not one. This is not one, but Ghana's going to be fired up for this game. Their manager Otto has insisted it's not about revenge for them. But you get a couple tackles flying in early in this game. Ooh, buddy. Ooh, buddy. This is going to get out of hand. In my opinion, Uruguay has been one of the more disappointing teams in the tournament. Yeah. I feel like they have a ton of attacking talent. Maybe it's hard to fit it all in, but they've played in too conservative of a manner. If they open up, I think they can win this and they can advance to the next stage. If they come in a conservative manner, I think Ghana gets what they need to advance.
I would tend to agree. I think Uruguay hasn't been able to utilize the talent that they have. They have some of the best named forwards on their side, but they haven't seen the ball, or they haven't been able to get enough opportunities to be able to shine in terms of scoring goals. Ghana, to me, has been good. They've conceded, but they know how to score. They've never given up as well. They've battled. They play some really nice soccer aesthetically. They've got very confident players on the ball that know how to move the ball, and they can be very, very dangerous. It depends which Ghana comes to play, though. Is it the Ghana that isn't focused enough, that maybe has one eye on revenge and is allowing the off-the-pitch stuff to unsettle them? I think it's very important they come into this one clean slate, fresh game, and you can get your revenge with a result rather than on-the-field action.
Yeah, they can't let the emotion drive the game for them at all. They're a plus 370, according to the FanDuel Sportsbook, to win. Draw 280, Uruguay minus 135 as the favorite. Portugal about the same. They're minus 130. The draw is plus 290. And South Korea is a plus 340 to win that one. 2 p.m., Brazil, Cameroon, and Serbia and Switzerland. They'll finish things out in Group G. Let's start with Brazil and Cameroon. I had a chance to talk to Ricardo Oliveira, the club performance coach for Atlanta United. Brazilian, very excited about this team. We were on the road in Portland at dinner a few months ago, talking about the upcoming World Cup, and Ricardo was telling everybody about how good Brazil was going to be, and they're going to win it. He's still feeling the same way. And I asked him about a player that maybe wasn't getting enough attention for being part of how good Brazil is, and this is what Ricardo had to say.
I think Casemiro as well was one that we suffered big time in the last World Cup, because when we got knocked out by Belgium, he was suspended, so he didn't play that match, and we felt his presence, you know, like we really needed him there, especially in some transition moments. So I think those two players are very, and actually I think it's something that people are saying a lot, that like he's being very careful not to get yellow cards, Casemiro, this year. I believe he doesn't have any tomorrow. Tomorrow he shouldn't be starting, so hopefully nothing there as well, and hopefully we can make all the way through with everybody, no suspensions, and always having him there. So
you can hear the whole conversation with Ricardo on the Off the Woodwork podcast folder. But he mentioned yellow cards. Casemiro suspended due to yellows last time out was a huge loss. Being very careful with that, Tite will probably play a completely different Brazilian team. Dani Alves is expected to wear the captain's armband for them at 39 years old. Cameroon still has something to play for here. They've got to win and they've got to get some help. And that Serbia-Switzerland game will be a battle. Maybe they get the draw that they need. Maybe Cameroon pulls off an upset against the rotated Brazilian team. What you think?
Hey, stranger things have happened. We've seen some crazy things happening in these games. I think it's going to be another one where we have the laptop with one game and the TV with the other and your eyes looking in both directions, because you're not going to want to miss a beat. I do think the Brazilian team rotating is going to do a big favor. And I think it's the right move from Brazil. I understand they're protecting the players, particularly in this tournament where we know about the yellow cards and we know about, you know, injury prevention as well. We've seen a lot of injuries in this tournament coming through. So I get it. But I also think that it can stall your momentum a little bit if you don't get the result you want. It's very different moving into the knockout round after three victories or, you know, a victory in your last game versus picking up a defeat, even if you put that defeat on the fact that you rotated. I think that you always want to go in on your front foot after a victory in the last game of the group stages. No,
Brazil's a minus 260 according to FanDuel Sportsbook. The draw is 380. Cameroon is a plus 700. The odds makers are not buying into the Cameroon upset special. The other game's really interesting. Serbia and Switzerland, two very, very even teams. The odds reflect it. Serbia is a slight favorite at plus 160. Switzerland plus 170 to win. The draw is plus 230. Probably going to play Portugal in the round of 16. Probably. And Serbia is a team that has had success against Portugal. You go back to the World Cup qualifiers in Lisbon. Last minute goal by Serbia. That made Portugal have to go into the UEFA playoff rounds to get here to the World Cup. So Serbia is not going to be afraid of Portugal, if that's the matchup. I don't think Switzerland is either. I think they're a really good defensive team. We've mentioned Akanji, the Manchester City center back. He's been brilliant in this tournament. Switzerland needs a little more help because of just how the goal differential and how everything plays out. Switzerland gets a win. Doesn't matter for them what happens with Cameroon. Serbia needs a little bit of help. They've got to get the help from Cameroon losing. If Cameroon wins, shockingly, against Brazil, then everything is chaos. Serbia and Switzerland, to me, Jess, maybe feels like one of the most even games in the entire group stage, and it's going to be the last game to see us out with the group stage.
Yeah, I would say so. Based on the performances we've seen from both of these teams, I think that they've all got some quality on them, right? But they haven't been able to maybe display the quality consistently through the group stages. We've seen goals, particularly from Serbia in the last game, right? And I think that they'll be feeling good about the fact that they can finish their chances. I know we've talked about the fact that they're not always able to get their best team on the pitch altogether because of issues with them playing the same role. That'll be interesting to see how they're able to handle that. The Swiss, I don't know how I feel about them. You know, they've got some very good key components, but they're not able to create as many opportunities as perhaps they would like to. And I think they rely a little bit too much on on Shaqiri at this stage in his career, which isn't ideal.
So here's what we know so far. Round of 16. It's going to start with the Netherlands and the United States. That's game one of the round of 16. The winner of that will play the winner of Argentina and Australia. That's a big time mismatch in terms of favorite versus upset special. Japan will play Croatia. This is the top half of the bracket. And then likely Brazil, because we expect them to win Group G. They will play the second place team out of Group H. Could be Ghana, could be Uruguay, could be South Korea. That one's kind of wide open. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Other half of the bracket, England and Senegal. Winner will play the winner of France and Poland. England-France quarterfinal might be on the cards. Morocco and Spain, and they will play the Group H winner versus likely, and it's probably going to be Portugal as that Group H winner, against Serbia or Switzerland. That's the likely matchups. Now, it's not how it worked out, but I'm sure there were people who were probably planning on floating a conspiracy theory out there, and not Graham Souness, by the way, about Spain. Spain coming in second in their group. If they had stayed in the top half of the bracket, they would have been looking at a likely Brazil quarterfinal. And then a likely, and this is all, again, according to the odds and favorites and all that, an Argentina semifinal if Spain found a way past Brazil. That's murderer's row. In the other half of the bracket, they're going to get Morocco in the round of 16 as opposed to getting Croatia. Toss-up. They will likely get Portugal. I'd rather play Portugal than Brazil, even if I'm Spain, where they hate each other. But I'd much rather play Portugal than Brazil. And then either the winner of England or France, if things play out the way that we expect, rather than Argentina in that semifinal. Maybe Spain lucked out by coming in second in their group. I don't know.
Yeah, we've seen it happen, right? And I think it's wild to claim that they threw the game on purpose because
they were going for it.
The players, there was no deliberate cause of that. And you never know, you know, you're not thinking about the bracket, you're just thinking about getting through. But it could have worked in their favor, but it also might not. Who knows? Morocco might be the team that sort of gets them. I think they're a dark horse. I don't think that's going to be as easy of a game as maybe the odd makers will put it, Jason.
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll be back tomorrow night to wrap everything up in these last two groups and get you ready for USA and Netherlands Saturday morning. Make sure you subscribe to the Off the Woodwork podcast on the Odyssey app or your favorite podcatcher. You can always listen to the show on demand there, and you can hear all of the bonus interviews in that spot. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Adios, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.